Imagine a school day built around your child's needs and interests. It's possible with K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited, tuition-free, online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn from state-certified teachers trained to teach online. And with the flexibility to learn wherever there's internet, it can fit into any family schedule. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. You can make the switch at any time. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more.
Hi, and welcome to the Homeopathy Health Show. I'm Atik Hamadbhati, a fourth-generation homeopath with over 20 years of professional experience in this field of healing. In the Homeopathy Health Show, I'll be talking all things homeopathy and natural, with guest interviews, tips and advice, and answering some of your questions. Homeopathy is truly a unique, complementary system of healing suitable for all ages, young and old. I'd love to hear from you and welcome your questions on homeopathy and how it can or has helped you. Feel free to email me at health@liketreatslike.co.uk or visit www.liketreatslike.co.uk for more information. Whilst you're there, take a look at the Knowledge Academy and blog section where you will find interesting information. Both sections are growing day by day, so always check back. So let's begin today's show on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio, real feel-good radio. Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Homeopathy Health Podcast here on UK Health Radio. As always, I do hope and pray you are well, and indeed may it continue to be that way. And today I'm thrilled. I have been delighted, and today I am, happy to say I'm thrilled to be joined by Tony Pincus. Tony is the owner and the technical director of Ainsworth's Homeopathic Pharmacy in London, a well-known, well-respected go-to place for homeopathic remedies with a reputation that spans nearly 40 years. Tony himself is a homeopathic pharmacist, grantee of royal warrants, dean of pharmacy at the Faculty of Homeopathy, chairman of the British Association of Flower Essence Providers, and a member of the British Association of Homeopathic Manufacturers. Tony Pincus, pleasure to have you on today's Homeopathy Health Podcast. Thank you so much for taking time out of your very, very hectic schedule to come and talk to me today.
Well, great to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Now, I wanted to ask you a question that I ask everybody, just to get to know your journey and into homeopathy, because I know that, Tony, you qualified as a pharmacist, actually, in 1980. So what happened between that and you coming on board at Ainsworth's? What was your journey like to homeopathy?
it was a long time ago, but I remember it very well. You know, I left university, and in pharmacy you have to do they call it a pre-registration training. So you have to go and work for a regular pharmacy. And in those days, I'd be out the back of the shop making up cough medicines and ointments and such like, which you completely has been removed from pharmacy these days, which is a shame. But nevertheless, there was at least some element of compounding that went on. And then I moved. And I found myself managing, one pharmacist practice somewhere north of London, and it was just me and a shop girl. And I suddenly became quickly disenchanted with conventional medicine, because whereas I really enjoyed studying, I enjoyed the academic experience. Suddenly, I realized that I was now a shopkeeper selling all sorts of things, and from nappies and sanitary towels to over the counter medicines. And apart from these two very busy spells at the beginning of the day and the end of the day, there were long periods where nothing happened, and I was getting quite bored with the whole thing. But what was most I suppose, disturbing was that I noticed that the people who were coming into the pharmacy, and we were next to a very busy four-doctor practice, so there was a lot of dispensing I was involved in. It was the same people coming in week after week after week, and, you know, filling out the dispensing the same prescriptions for them. And, you know, I started to ask questions like, you know, what's wrong with this picture? You know, if these people are receiving the same medication over and over again, why are they not being cured? You know, where was the element of cure in this? I had patients who were coming in with multiple problems of iatrogenesis. In other words, they were taking one drug, and then the side effects of that meant they had another drug, and then another drug, and another drug. And I suppose the best example of that was a lady who was coming in every week after week, and I give her literally a shopping bag of drugs to go away with. And at one point I said to her, well, what is it? Why am I giving you all this stuff? What's the problem? She said, oh, you know, I had an accident, a car injury, and I did something to my back, and they put me on these very heavy opiate painkillers. And if I took them all, if I took the regular dose, they knocked me out completely, and I was walking around like a zombie, and they made me terribly constipated. So I couldn't take them all, so I cut down on the amount that I'm taking, which meant I was still in pain. So they gave me some more painkillers that were different. And then because I was still in pain, I got depressed. So they gave me antidepressants. And because of that, I wasn't sleeping. So now I have a painkiller, you know, something for my depression. And now I've got a sleeping pill as well on top of everything. And then I'm giving her a bottle, you know, about a liter bottle each time of lactulose syrup because of all the constipation that she's wound up with. Mm. And I said, well, this is, you know, this is, in terms of healing arts, this is pretty much near the bottom of the pile. And yet this was quite commonplace. And I thought there must be something better than this, you know. And then one of the, it was a small group of pharmacists, and one of the pharmacists in the chain said, you know, would you be interested in reading a book on homeopathy? And we sold some homeopathic remedies in the pharmacy. I knew nothing about them. And I very well remember the conversation, because I said, you know, I was so bored, I'd read the wallpaper here, you know, I had no bias against the concept of homeopathy. I said, well, I don't know anything about it. I'd be interested to read about it, because whether it works or not, I'm actually interested, because at that stage I'd started a course in psychotherapy, and I was, you know, looking at nutrition. So I was looking outside of the mainstream pharmacy, and I'd started a small group called the Holistic Pharmacists Association. Anyway, so he sent me a book, and he said, it's called The Magic of the Minimum Dose by Dorothy, I think it was by Dorothy Shepherd. And I had a look at this book, and I couldn't understand it. I can't get all these words, miasm. I don't know what it's about. He said, well, don't worry. There's another book that's just come out. I'll send you that instead. And he sent me a copy of George Vitalkis's Science of Homeopathy. And for me, this was a sort of a watershed, because it was a page turner. You know, I couldn't put it down, because it was a latter day explanation of homeopathy. It was written in a modern language by somebody who clearly had a lot of experience in the game. And ironically, as part of my role in the faculty, we met George last week, and, you know, he's still going way into his 80s. And I read this book from cover to cover. And as soon as I finished it and I turned the last page, I said, I've got to find out whether this stuff is true or this is some sort of fiction. Because if what this guy is saying in this book is true, then there is such a thing as a cure. And what I've been practicing in this pharmacy is just palliation. And I didn't have long to wait, because later on that day, in walks this guy, and, you know, he had tinnitus, you know, he had chronic tinnitus. And, he said to me, he handed me a prescription for betahistine, which is a kind of an antihistamine, which crosses the blood-brain barrier and has some moderating effect on the noise that people with tinnitus hear. And he said it doesn't cure it, he said. And he was clearly in a rather depressed state, and he walked in with his wife, and I could tell that his relationship with his wife was a bit dodgy. And what remarked me to about him was he had this very strange attitude. You know, he was like almost fractious. You know, there was this fractious element to him. And yet he was desperately seeking help. He was in some sort of pain with it. And I said, you know, what's the problem? He said, well, I've got this tinnitus and I've been having acupuncture. And he said, the acupuncture helps, but as soon as I stop paying for the acupuncture, the problem comes back again. He said, I just spent 750 quid on acupuncture. I haven't got any more money to spend on it. So that compounded the problem, and he was now in search of something else. I said, so I rubbed my hands together. I said, well, would you like to try homeopathy? And this is after on the strength of reading one book and buying a copy of Boerica's Materia Medica. So there I was, and I created a kind of questionnaire because I hadn't had any training at that stage. And he said, okay, you know, it's like he was doing me a favor by letting him help him. So I said, well, I'll dispense your prescription so you can take that with you. And I did a quick search, and I was nudged to find this remedy. I'm just going to use that word. I was nudged to find this remedy. And I gave him the remedy in a 6C, and I said, look, go and take this remedy 3 times a day and come back and see me in 2 weeks. And this was the first prescription from nowhere. And he disappeared off. And for 2 weeks, I was chomping the bit, keenly wanting to find out whether anything happened. And 2 weeks comes and goes. There's no sign of the guy. And I was really frustrated because I thought, well, I really want to know. And this is everything is hanging on this, this outcome. And, at that stage, I fished out his prescription, found his name and address, which nowadays you can't do because of all the GDPR and everything else. But absolutely. I rang him up and I said, excuse me, but you came in and, you know, what the hell's going on? You know, he said, oh, he said to me, it could be a coincidence, but it seems a bit better. And, he was still this kind of miserable, fractious person, but I said, well, can you come back in and I'll find something else for you? So he came back into the pharmacy and he presented himself at the counter, but he was this rather difficult, you know, personality, you know, slightly irritable and making it rather difficult for me to help him. And for whatever reason, I decided to give him the same remedy, but in a 30C potency. And I said, here you go, take this. It sounds like a Shaggy Dog story. I said, go and take these remedies and, the 30C, the same remedy, come back and see me in 2 weeks. So off he goes. And I'm thinking, well, it's boom or bust here. Either he's never going to see me again, or this is going to be my experience. Mm. 2 weeks to the day, the guy walks into the shop and it's like a transformed character. He walks up to the counter and he's excited. He's, personality seems to have shifted into some sort of humble and much more acceptable mode. And he's excitedly telling me, well, you know, I followed your instructions. I took the remedy and I have to tell you that it's completely transformed my tinnitus, which I've had for years. And he was a psychologist. He knew he'd gone through his whole history. He said, I know why I've got it, but it hasn't changed the fact. So I said, well, what happened? He said, well, you know, I took the remedy and I noticed that I used to get 3 very bad days and then 3 not so bad days, you know, 3 very bad days and followed by 3 relatively good days. But now I'm getting 4 very good days, much better than I've had before, followed by 1 bad day. He said, but even then it's manageable because the frequency has come down. And it's more pleasant for me, you know, not to have this screaming noise in my ear. And then he said something to me, which was the clincher. You know, he said, made the hairs on the back of my neck stand on end. He said, and you know what? He said, I feel better in myself. And I've never, you know, I've been dispensing drugs for 3 years, every day, twice a day. And nobody had said anything even vaguely like this. And I thought, okay, so I've got it. So this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And I never looked really back from that point. You know, I had, he went on to a 200, the same remedy, and then, and then he disappeared off. He emigrated to New Zealand. That was the end of him. And then I would get lots of unhappy housewives coming in, give them remedies, and they would pack their bags and leave their husbands. And I thought, it's time to get out of Dodge. at which point, John Ainsworth offered me a job, and I went to work for Ainsworth.
How did you know John?
What happened was, I during the time I was working at this pharmacy, I'd started this association called the Holistic Pharmacists Association, which sounds almost like a contradiction in terms. And I was producing the newsletter and typing it up on an old golf board typewriter and Ronioing it and producing it. And at that time, there were a number of very elderly, well-known pharmacists who were interested in homeopathy and other CAM issues. And they're really too happy for somebody to do all the dog's body work. And I, you know, arranged meetings in London, and John turned up at the meeting. He sat there very quietly. And then one day I was reading the pharmaceutical, journal looking for the job section. And there was this very understated advert that said, pharmacy in London specializing in alternative medicine seeks pharmacist or pharmacy manager. And I thought, okay, well, that's interesting. Let me apply for that. And I applied for it. I wrote to him, and he said, oh, it's you. He said, oh, you can have the job if you want. That was my interview.
Wonderful. Well, the good old days, eh?
That was back in 1983. And I can honestly say I haven't looked back a day since that time.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Imagine a school day built around your child's needs and interests. It's possible with K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited, tuition-free, online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn from state-certified teachers trained to teach online. And with the flexibility to learn wherever there's internet, it can fit into any family schedule. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. You can make the switch at any time. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Tony, you know, that story that you just shared with us, your journey is very, very inspiring. But it raises this question that a 6C, a 30C, 200C, what's your insight as far as the question on does potency matter, or potency matters per se?
Yes, I mean, I think, the more you delve into homeopathy, the more you recognize that there's a very wide schools of thought within homeopathy about potency, which have really started with Hahnemann and his exploration of remedies and how potency came into the frame. But there are different schools of thought in relation to potency which happened along that way. And largely because of experimentation that was done in the early days and the way certain principles were applied. So, for example, Hahnemann used dilutions primarily in the centesimal potency, but towards the end of his life, he changed what he was doing, and he went over to using effectively a high potency scale, the 50 millesimal scale, in which he was giving patients LM potencies and giving remedies by inhalation rather than even taking them. So there's a lot that Hahnemann was doing that that we haven't really done, because, you know, he published his seminal text, The Organon, in six editions. And most of the world of homeopathy focuses in on the fourth edition and follows the kind of prescribing that was done and popularized by Kent in the early 20th century. And in that avenue, the centesimal potency tends to be used, and people tend to follow a pattern of using ascending potencies from the lower ones to the higher ones in if they're going to come up with a classical prescription. Not the only way, of course, but it's one way.
I found that, I find now that especially post-COVID, and we will touch upon that later in the podcast today, but the LM scale is so immensely effective for the myriad of mental health and emotional complaints that are now arising post-COVID and just the way society is. It's a magical scale, a magical potency state level, making a big difference, but in such a gentle way that there's changes in people, very much like your story where the gentleman came in, you know, 2 weeks later and he's smiling, whereas before it certainly was not that way. Well, I think the work, like you've quite rightly said, the work of Dr. Hahnemann, especially with the sixth edition of The Organon, which was obviously published after his passing, there's a lot of information in there that can be used for our benefit and understanding to enhance it.
Yes, there's an anachronism or there's a strange quirk of fate, you know, because Hahnemann's work and he was a genius in the way he was working, but it was followed up to a point, and he was somebody who was an incredibly serious individual who wanted to perfect the art of cure, and who was at all times motivated by his Hippocratic oath, first do no harm. And so, you know, when he discovered that, you know, you would generate something like an aggravation, he was obsessed with the idea of how can I remove the aggravation? How can I remove this sense of, you know, what on the one hand seems like a healing crisis, but is actually a waste of energy? You know, how can I overcome that? And the LM potencies were a subtle way of moving beyond that and delivering a different potency on each event in which the patient took the remedy. And therefore was a much more subtle and delicate way of introducing the remedy. But there was a long journey that he went through, and, you know, and it's been variously interpreted over the last 250 years by people across the world in all sorts of different ways. You know, on the one hand, I suppose you have, and there's a very big difference, I suppose, that people listening to this podcast might not realize. There's a big difference between homeopathic pharmacy and homeopathic manufacture. If you're a practitioner or you're a patient, for example, and you come in, you've seen a practitioner, a patient has been handed a prescription, which is an individual prescription, individually bespoke for their requirement at that moment in time. And you walk into a homeopathic pharmacy, we can't make anything up until you hand us that piece of paper. So if I'm going to go into Boots and find a product on the shelf that says, this is a remedy for a cough, how do we align these two things? Because, you know, in the mind of the public, these are both forms of homeopathy. But on the one hand, if I'm manufacturing something and calling myself a manufacturer, then I need a market. And there's not a market as one person who's going to come in. So I can't manufacture that guy's prescription until he brings it in, unless I've got some sort of crystal ball that I know what everybody's going to want ahead of time. Yes. And they're not always going to want the same thing. So what you see is how homeopathy has proliferated in various countries around the world by people making up what we call specifics or nostrums. But that, you know, that creates obviously a different type of patient, and there's a different attitude towards it from the patient who's going to go to a practitioner and have the individualized approach.
It's fascinating talking to you. So we can see quite clearly, I can see the immense knowledge that you have. So great. Thank you again for coming on board. Moving back to John Ainsworth's and you starting there, tell us a bit about what it was like working with John himself, his objectives, ethos, what your day would involve, and how that led to a very important date in your life, which was 1989. Say no more.
Well, John was a lovely guy. He's had a very strong political nous, and he had he'd been active in the Second World War. He'd come out of the war without an occupation, and his wife Peggy was the niece of the Everetts, who in those days owned a company called Nelson's in Duke Street, who had the royal warrants of appointment to the king. And they said to him, well, go get a pharmacy degree and come and join us, and you can be a pharmacist in the pharmacy. And so this is what he did. And for quite a long time, he worked for them. And then in 1971, there was a famous air crash in Staines, and it killed the owners of Nelson's and also a top echelons of homeopathic practitioners, homeopathic doctors that were on their way to an international conference in Switzerland. And John had taken, had driven there to sell books, homeopathic books at the event. And he was now left in charge of Nelson's. And he had a large number of staff there that were loyal to him. And he couldn't afford to buy it. So it was sold to a trust, and he fell out with the people who owned it. And then they, he parted company with them, and he then went to form, Ainsworth's in round the corner in New Cavendish Street. And so that was in 1978. And all the people who were loyal to him there had been booted out with him, and they came to join him. So he had hundreds of years worth of experience that started off Ainsworth's. And he was also in charge of the BHA, the British Homeopathic Association, which is now Homeopathy UK. And he would go around the country popularizing homeopathy. He would do roadshows, educate people, teach people. And I came in to a company that was basically, whose ethos was, let's produce the best remedies we can for the public and to make those up. So it was traditionally a homeopathic pharmacy. And there had been, and there was at that time, the growing sense of, well, we need to build up a manufacturing industry so that we can generate sufficient capital to keep this industry alive. And it's a challenge in homeopathy to do that, because if you're going to just make a business based on individual prescribing, that's a large degree of labor and a lot of effort. So this is the job, and this is the passion, if you like, that you have to have to want to provide that. But it is an exciting role. And so I came to work for him, and at that time there were about four pharmacists working for him, which seems quite extravagant by today's standard. And it was learning like an apprentice on the hoof, acute prescribing, and people would come in and they would demand things, and you'd have to treat people on the counter. And in those days, there were quite a lot of homeopathic doctors in and around the area of Hardy Street, which is where the shop is. And we would, receive prescriptions, lots of different types of prescribing, and got to the point where I could tell who'd written the prescription just by the nature of the prescription, the type of prescribing. It tends to be quite everybody, you know, all practitioners have their own style of prescribing. You know, they learn and hone their skills, but then they kind of move into an area where if I picked up a prescription, I could tell you who wrote it at that stage. And, you know, I was doing this on a daily basis, answering the phone, taking calls, giving advice. And we had quite a few people ringing in asking for advice for their animals as well as themselves. And, you know, the public are fairly demanding. You know, if there's something wrong with them, they're quite insistent. And so they push. And John, after a while, decided, look, I want to retire. But he wanted to ensure there was some legacy. He didn't want this thing to disappear. And he didn't have any of his own children that were interested in getting involved. So he wanted to create some sort of management buyout. And I was the only one at the end of the day who was interested in taking on the mantle. And I was about, just got married. My wife was pregnant, and it was like a big move. And so eventually I agreed to buy him out, and that was in 1989. It was, I suddenly found myself in my late 20s with a son and a company and the responsibility of 50 people's salaries at the end of each month, you know. So that was an intriguing part of the journey.
Fascinating story indeed. But you know, these stories, they're always so inspiring, because it just shows you that, you know, it shows you that the destiny that most, you have come across so many stories, and it's almost like it's pre-planned destiny, that people with compassion and love for healing per se, you know, are led towards homeopathy. And I've heard these stories so many times, and it's so inspiring. And these opportunities that happen, and it's not just coincidence and it's not chance, you know, these things happen for a reason, for the greater good as such. And
I absolutely agree with you. You know, I'm more than convinced of that as a fact, you know, so you're absolutely right.
Tony, you have been teaching at the Faculty of Homeopathy, and also the other college as well, which is the College of Homeopathic Education. And I know that you were involved with teaching also doctors and vets and practitioners in general. Do share what that was like and what was it, how you got involved there as such.
I think my concern continues to be to demystify homeopathy, to remove it from the ivory tower and to make it accessible to the public and to the broadest way to the public. And I was always aware, and up to this day, I've been confirmed thousands and thousands and thousands of times. Every time I pick up the phone, I can feel that it's not the intellectual level or capacity of the patient that leads them to homeopathy. It's a feeling. It's a feeling somewhere deep in their soul that says, you know what, this is what I want for myself. This is what I want for my child. This is what I want for my family. This is even what I want for my dog or my herd of cattle. Mm. So I think interviewed once by, as it was at the New York Times, and they said, who are your customers? I said, well, everybody from your guinea pig to the Queen Mother. and it is a complete span of the public. And for me, I would say it's a privilege to be able to serve those people who beat a path to our door and who want that, who demand that. And they're kind of moved away from a sense of trying to, proselytize the desire to encourage everybody to move into homeopathy to, determining that I would spend more time with a more discerning audience who want to know more. And that was, you know, from public lectures to the public to working for the faculty in the early days, and then moving on to the doctor's courses became really exciting in the kind of the late 90s, the early 90s, there was the homeopathic physicians teaching group, which was held in Oxford. Mm-hmm. And they would have lots and lots of doctors, vets and dentists coming to learn homeopathy. And they would bring in phenomenal speakers. You know, they would have all sorts of practitioners that would come in, and world-class speakers that would come in. And you'd have, you know, workshops with, you know, Ramakrishnan, Jonathan Shaw, Hans Zimmer, who'd spend, you know, the entire weekend talking about one aphorism, the first aphorism in the Organon, and debating how homeopathy was essentially a revelation to God, as from God, according to Hahnemann, and what that really meant. So, you know, there were very exciting times, and so there was a lot of work for, you know, introducing courses at the faculty level, doing lectures on essentially homeopathic pharmacy, because the piece of the equation that most courses don't have is an understanding of how to make the remedies. And you look at the Organon, you say, well, what is this book? And it's basically a book of three parts. You know, what is homeopathy? How do you practice it? And how do you make the medicines? And the bit about how to make the medicines is how I spent my last, you know, four decades. So that's been, you know, a sort of a passion of mine. But you can't focus in just in on that without actually, you know, giving the support to the patients who are buying the medicines and helping them to understand what they're taking, how they're taking it. So the role, you know, that I've had to fit into is the pragmatic role of assisting the public in supplying the remedies, but also understanding how to use them and prescribing. And in amongst that, I've kind of meandered into the veterinary field where, you know, we always had a scattering of people that would come in asking, I want something for my dog, I want something for my cat, I want something for my horse. And then you get farmers coming in who want to prevent mastitis in a herd, or farmers who'd want to treat herds of sheep or flocks of sheep or goats or camels, anything, you know. And I think over the years there's been a move in trying to widen the scope of homeopathy in these areas, and now it's moving into even more into agriculture, as you're probably aware.
Absolutely. That's an upcoming field, and very exciting. It's technically still early days. It's been about 10 years, hasn't it? And I know that we're going to talk about that later, actually, today, because I've been speaking about agri-homeopathy with Pat O'Hearn from Ireland, and he was talking about mastitis, actually, and how, you know, he came across homeopathy. And Camilla Scher has also been on, and she's been speaking about agri-homeopathy and how it's making such a big difference. But I know you have helped 5,000 farms, actually, in the UK with homeopathy here as well. But before we go into that, I actually wanted to ask you, as far as teaching is concerned, is it something that, I mean, do you still have time to get involved with teaching? Because I know that when I first contacted you by phone, you were preparing medicines at Ainsworth. So I know where your time is going.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
But do you still get time or an opportunity to perhaps teach and share the knowledge that
I absolutely. I was teaching, you know, quite a lot this week. These days I do, because I also make, I also grow and make the batch flower remedies, which I've created a new way of working with, and new way of using for diagnosis and treatment. And I teach a course in that. So I think with the advent of the pandemic, a lot of work moved onto Zoom, which actually simplified the teaching. you know, because before then you had traveling, you had to keep to all sorts of complicated schedules associated with traffic and roads and trains. And with the advent of Zoom, you know, you can get up and, you know, you can do the work in your pajamas if you so want to, but it's a lot easier for everybody. It's cut down on everybody's carbon footprint. And I, you know, at the weekend I had, you know, students in America, Canada and Brussels, and then, you know, on Australia. So you can have all these people on the screen in front of you. And as far as you're concerned, it's just one class. But I still do feel that the educational role is fundamental, because, you know, I think we get a bit focused within the realms of homeopathy. We assume that people know what it's about and how it works. But my concern is that, you know, hundreds of times a day I'll come across people who have some understanding of homeopathy, but it's not in any way a practical working knowledge. And they have all sorts of assumptions that need to be corrected, and all sorts of concerns and worries and food, you know, how do I take the remedy? How do I store the remedy? Am I doing this properly? And, you know, I remember for years, you can make up these rigid rules about how to take remedies and what you should do and what you shouldn't do. And then you come across the case like I did, where I was doing a project with autistic children back in the late 90s. And there was one remedy that was very significant that was having a huge impact on all these autistic kids. And we had 3,000 parents of autistic kids that came in like a tidal wave, and they all wanted this remedy. And so we were sending it out, and I was doing some research on what was going on with these kids after they took it. And one mother phoned in and she said, well, can you tell me, you know, if I'm doing this right? I said, well, what are you taking? And she told me, and she said, I said, what's happened since you've been giving your child the remedy? Oh, he's made a huge jump. His eye contact's improved. His speech is coming forward. But I'm worried about the way I'm giving the remedy. I said, well, what are you doing? She said, well, he wouldn't take the remedy from me just giving it to him on his tongue. So I had to hide the granules inside his sausages, his breakfast sausages. Do they? And you think, well, don't we start telling people don't take it in near food or drink? And and yet, after all of that, you know, you have a remedy that's clearly working. And it gets more interesting when I'm talking to farmers and you're trying to treat 100 cows or a million laying hens or you know, a flock of sheep on a Welsh hillside. And you have to then spend more time thinking about the strategy of administering the remedy rather than what you're going to give and how you're going to, you know, how you're going to achieve that.
How was that? I know that you've had some 5,000 farms, I think, within the UK who are now using homeopathy for common diseases. And I mentioned Pat Ahern only because he was convinced after treating his cows, his herd, his cattle with for mastitis. So how have you found that within the UK? Is 5,000 a big figure as far as farming is concerned?
It's a fair old chunk. You know, there's a lot of, I mean, that was over a period of time. And, I know Pat and spoken to him and worked with him for quite a while. And he's quite a character because his enthusiasm is infectious, and he's managed to get lots of other farmers in the Cork area of Southern Ireland to get involved in homeopathy. And they're all passionate about it. And I go back to basic principles. What are we trying to do here? We're trying to find a better way to treat the patient. We're trying to find a way that creates less harm. We're trying to find a way of reducing side effects. We're trying to find a way that encourages the patient to get better under their own steam, rather than making them, a drug addict effectively and have suffer side effects. And one of the problems that farmers get is that, you know, they are in a situation like mastitis. You have a situation where the farmer rocks up and says, well, I'm worried about antibiotic resistance. I'm worried about the fact that, these antibiotics don't work and they cost a lot of money. And if I give them, I've got to wait for considerable periods of time before I can actually sell my milk again. And most of my losses, hundreds of pounds of throwing milk away, as well as the antibiotic residues, then the consequences of loss of an animal if the antibiotic doesn't work and so forth. And then calling out a vet at £120 an hour for him to tell me to put the animal down. You come across all of this and then you think, well, actually homeopathy has significant benefits in this area because on the one hand, you can offer the remedies in the pharma remedies for the prevention of a disease. And homeoprophylaxis, which is this big subject, which is somewhat controversial in some areas, is phenomenal. And over the years, I've found that it's extraordinary because homeoprophylaxis is basically saying, well, this disease is either coming down the pike or it's arrived or I know it's going to arrive, you know, and you can look at various scenarios. And if you know something is going to arrive and you know that your herd or your cattle or even your children are going to be affected by it, then you can do something about it. Now, where does that all arrive from? Well, there's one aphorism in the Organon. It's aphorism 33, footnote A. And the numerologists around you will say, interesting, 33 is the number of universal service, which is quite ironic. But that aphorism said, Hahnemann reports the work of some other homeopaths who were working in the towns like Königsklößen in Germany, where after the Napoleonic Wars, all these corpses lying around, lots of disease. The kids were very prone to infection, in particular scarlet fever, which would kill them or have a high mortality rate. And it's reported in this aphorism that, you know, if you could give a homeopathic remedy, it would be a stronger impulse in the body than whatever else was going on, the natural disease process. And so, reporting in this case that kids who were given belladonna, a small dose of belladonna, didn't succumb to scarlet fever. Now you took that one aphorism, that one statement, and you extrapolate it as widely as you can. And so I have, farms that want to use nosodes for the prophylaxis of mastitis and foot problems and eye problems and viral conditions. And they do it very successfully. And farmers are pragmatic. They phone up and they say, I've heard you've got a remedy that will stop my cows getting mastitis and lower my somatic cell count. They're interested in, can you do this or not? I'm not interested in me hedging my bets here. Or you get farmers ringing up saying, well, I always used to use phytolacca for mastitis, but it doesn't work anymore. And I say, what do you mean it doesn't work anymore? Well, it doesn't work on this cow. And you think, well, hang on a minute. You've misunderstood the remedy picture for that remedy, and then having to explain that there's a process of order when you're giving a remedy, and simplifying and educating them to say, well, at the onset you have an inflammatory process followed by a suppurative process followed by a hardening or induration process, and these are the natural processes that both animals and humans go through. And if you know that and you can predict it, then you can give farmers like Pat a very clear understanding of how to go about treating their animals. And it works. And he gets really good success. And he can, remove antibiotics largely from the table. And by doing so, he saves a lot of money because he's now £400 in pocket that he hasn't thrown away in milk. And that's encouraging him to do more. And so they get more and more involved in homeopathy and they treat other things. And we make, kit of remedies for farmers just to go and treat their animals. And they have great guns. Now, if they don't have the remedies there, then, most of the situations are emergencies. So there's no point having a conversation with somebody on a Friday night and says, well, X, Y, and Z is now in an acute crisis. Can I have a remedy? And say, well, you can have it next week. That becomes the barrier. People need, and they learn from the experience in homeopathy by practical experience. You know, you didn't learn to ride a bicycle by reading a book. And as you said, you've got all those, you open the show by saying you have all those books around you. But there's a great big difference between the intellectual and knowledge that you gain from reading and the actual physical experience that you gain from trial and error.
And that was part one of my podcast with Tony Pincus, owner and chief pharmacist at Ainsworth's Homeopathic Pharmacy in London. Part two will follow in the next episode. That really was a wonderful conversation, wasn't it? So much knowledge and experience. And I'm looking forward to sharing part two with you because Tony actually goes on to speak about the royal family and his involvement as far as homeopathy is concerned. I do hope you've enjoyed the Homeopathy Health Show here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. Tune in next time for more things homeopathy, interviews, and segments on the healing possibilities that homeopathy can bring you. And don't forget to visit UK Health Radio online at www.ukhealthradio.com to see the many other amazing shows available to listen live and on demand. Or why not download the app from the iOS and Android stores? Until next time, stay safe and take care.